Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Do you remember the year 2012 in September? That's when amateur hour first began. Just two friends talking about the Chiefs. The team was awful. A lot's changed since 11 years ago. Now we have Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. And oh yeah, we won a Super Bowl.
You're welcome.
It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour to start. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, oh yeah.
Wow. Let's go!
Yeah! Hey, folks. Welcome to Amateur Hour. The show is called Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. And with me today, listen, folks, if you're going to get weird, this is the guy you want by your side. It's his darkness.
In. Come. Sup?
That was good. That was good.
Thanks.
So, listen, Dirk, when I said that if you're trying to get weird, you want to have Dirk by your side. And that was a weird one on Sunday.
Yeah, that was weird.
people
are like, this is the absolute bottom of the Denver Broncos having the worst season, I mean, of any team this year, I would say. I mean, not the worst record, but the worst season versus expectation. And probably the worst of like any 10 years. And yet people are like, this is the absolute low point. Once Russell Wilson throws that pick six and it's 27-0 in the second quarter at home and boos are raining down. And then, I don't know, 45 minutes later in real time, all of a sudden it's a football game and the Broncos have the ball with a chance to take the lead against the Chiefs. And I was like, what the fuck? What happened? What happened here?
You know, the 27-0, just to like pause inside of the 27-0 moment. You know, Dirk out there in Los Angeles, me on my couch here in South Kansas City, and both of us are tweeting about, somebody get the picture of Travis Kelce leaned back on the bench with that like $1 million smile on his face. Somebody please get this picture, right?
An all-time moment, all time.
And one of my favorite Travis Kelce photos, it's saved in my phone.
The shit-eating grin on his face as he's just like, this is awesome. This is awesome.
It was excellent. This is not in any way, shape, or form trying to like be negative. I promise you it's not. But just to, for contextual purposes, I believe it was Pete Sweeney, and not like the Arrowhead Pride Twitter account, but I think it's Pete. He tweeted after 27-0. He says, I'll go ahead and say it. It's Henny time. Henny time. And there's like, you know, some minutes left in the second quarter. And he's like, it should be Chad Henny's game now. And he wasn't wrong. That is exactly how it felt. And well, how it's
Go ahead. Keep going.
I'm like, how it became a football game. I mean, look, we can tell ourselves whatever stories we want. I think I've been a little defensive of the defense, of the Chiefs' defense, because it seemed like maybe that was everybody's reaction. It was like the only thing that I felt like all I was seeing was the Broncos scored the most points they have all year. They had 28. And so that was just kind of what everybody got hung up on. But I feel like there's a little more to talk about there. I know you have a lot of season defensive stuff that you want to look over. But I do want to point out something that I don't feel like anybody has really mentioned. You know, we got pretty vintage Russell Wilson on Sunday. And honestly, I thought it was a lot of fun to watch.
You like to watch him cook?
Whether people recognized it or not in the moment, that is the most like Russell Wilson he has looked in Denver. He's had a couple good games, but just to kind of back up what I'm saying, Russ had 4 for 57 yards on the ground, nearly doubled his previous season high. It was his fourth highest passer rating, and I don't know at what point he got knocked out of the game, but I mean, Russ got knocked out of the game because he was going for it. That was 100% the Denver Broncos Super Bowl. Home game against the Chiefs in a terrible season, that was their Super Bowl. And he made the game wonderfully fun. And I think that there are a lot of people that are frustrated, but honestly, I had a really good time watching it. It was a strange game. We beat the Broncos. The streak lives. You know, they're tied for the best record in the AFC. I don't feel like I walked away from the game feeling super negative. And I saw a lot of negativity out there.
There was a bit of negativity on the Twitter.com. I'm not sure if you've perused that application before, but I'm not sure if it runs negative. Is that a normal thing? Is it? Are people usually negative on there? Okay.
Perhaps.
Russell Wilson, I will say, people love to shit on Russell Wilson, and I get it, but he does a lot of fake stuff. I get it. It's easy to make fun of, but like, I like nerds. I'll stick up for nerds. And dude, after he gets knocked out, he's trying to like turn around and like watch how the drive ends when they were kind of like, hey, Russell, we need to check on your brain and make sure it's still working. And he's like, let me see if this drive for my 3-9 team ends in a touchdown. So it's like, there's some endearing qualities to Russell Wilson, as much as fun as it is to dunk on him, because there's a lot of, you know, rough around the edges parts, a lot of fake. But regardless, he did play well. I do think fans were very disappointed. I mean, it's obviously taken too far, I would say. I think Chiefs fans were they're still trying to get over the Bengals loss. And I think they really saw this game as a get right game for the defense specifically. And it wasn't quite that. And then on the other hand, you have Chiefs fans really pushing for Mahomes to get this MVP. And that's, you know, when you're in this stretch of the season and we got this remaining schedule that we got left, you want to see Mahomes get it. And it's like, none of these games are really like top competitors. So it's like, okay, we should win all these, but let's also get Pat this MVP award. And it was a bad game for that too, even though he had two outstanding highlights that will make it on his MVP reel. Despite that, he had three very bad decisions. One of which was an incredible catch by the defense, maybe even two of those incredible interceptions, which if they don't catch those, then we're, you know, if they don't make these two exceptional catches, then we're not really talking about it. But I think that was kind of the disappointment from fans, really, was coming off the Bengals loss, kind of hoping to see the defense show some signs of confidence. And even though they did do some good things, you know, 6 sacks in the game, 2 turnovers in the game, they still kind of let it become a game once it was over, and allowed the season high to the Broncos, even though it was pretty clear what happened. I mean, the Chiefs got up so much that, you know, the Chiefs let their foot off the gas. I mean, it wasn't tough to see. I mean, that's clearly what happened in a 27-0 game. And then Patrick Mahomes just trying to do too much on a few different plays. And that's how the game got close.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't want to forget that I think at times both the offense and the defense were really humming. You got to see some of the best and some of the worst.
Hey,
Dirk,
you can read it. Look out for it this week. It's coming this week.
But really, some of the best and some of the worst of the Chiefs season. when I look at the Mahomes aspect of it, like, I mean, when as soon as he stepped to the microphone, he's like, look, I'm going to keep throwing. You know, that's pretty much what we do. And I don't think I had much of a problem with any of the interceptions that he threw, mostly because I felt like the Chiefs were just in control of the game. It felt like a, you know, turn it on, turn it off sort of thing. And really the Mahomes interceptions felt like maybe some lapses in concentration. But this is a game that was at one point 27-0. You know, you're never supposed to like let off the gas. And even though Andy's like kind of made a habit of doing shutdown sort of stuff, when you're up 27-0, it's like both the offense and the defense are probably ready to just be like, all right, cool, we could kind of pack it in for the rest of the day. Our work is done here.
And it deserves to be said, this was not the Andy Reid shutdown mode, because if it was, he wouldn't be throwing interceptions. I mean, the whole point of the Andy Reid shutdown mode is to turn off all aggression, turn off showing any of your better plays, and just use package plays, and we're just going to grind this one out to the end. I mean, if they do that, the Chiefs probably win, you know, 27-14, and it's just like, ho-hum, who cares? It's like you learn absolutely nothing in the second half. This wasn't that. I mean, this was the opposite. This was not going into shutdown mode, and that's how it became a game. So
I remember asking the ether at one point, like, why are we even throwing right now? I think it was after Mahomes' second interception. Like, why are we even throwing? Who cares? You know, and look, maybe that's, I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to, you know, get reps against another top defense, or maybe just as players on the field can make a mistake here and there, a little brain fart, you know, they were like, we're on a roll and we're going to go get Pat that MVP. Maybe they're too caught up in the MVP race. Who knows? Mahomes with 11 interceptions in, I guess it's 13 games. Is that right? 10-3 now?
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's not terrible. I do, a couple weeks ago, I was like giving Josh Allen such a hard time for being such a goofball quarterback. And he and Mahomes have the same number of picks on the year now. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. I don't care if he throws three picks or not. Let me ask you this. Anything about Sunday concern you? Do you walk away from that game and be like, these are our concerns, dude? Like, I mean, I think I'm unbothered by what happened, but I don't want to just be dismissive.
No, I was not concerned. I mean, it wasn't pretty. You know, the totality of it wasn't pretty. Playing a team as lifeless as the Broncos have been most of the season, and to actually see them have life at some point, that wasn't great. But nothing concerning, really. No, I mean, there's kind of this movement of, you know, the Chiefs never make it easy, which I guess I get. I mean, they kind of do play down to their competition, I guess. But you know, so I kind of looked at that. You know, how many double digit wins do the Chiefs have this season? Let's look at some actual stats on this. So double-digit wins from the Chiefs in 2022. They got 5. Okay, 5 in 13 games, seems about right. Last year, they had 7. The year before that, they had 5. 2019, Super Bowl season, they had 7. 2018, they had 7. So, I mean, do we get 2 more double-digit wins this season? Probably. I mean, I guess the teams we're playing, so we're probably right on pace with how we usually play. Okay, but is it a rant Andy Reid thing? Let's look at the NFL in 2022. How are the other top teams doing with double-digit wins? These walk away, making it easy. The Bills have 5, same as the Chiefs. The Bengals have 5, same as the Chiefs. The Dolphins have 3. Eagles and Cowboys both have 6. The Vikings have 1. Go Vikings. And the 49ers have 8. Running away with the lead in that department. If only a team could beat them by double digits. Oh, wait, we beat them by 21 points earlier in the season, in a very easy win over a top 5 NFL team, but that's not easy enough for some of these fans out here. So, I mean, looking around the league, I guess the Eagles and Cowboys, I know the Eagles have had an easier schedule than us. I'm guessing the Cowboys have. And the 49ers, I mean, that's an impressive number, I guess, but, you know, they they got more losses than us, I guess, and we beat their ass. So I don't know. I'd give them credit for there, I guess. But there's not really that many teams with more double-digit wins than the Chiefs. It's really just fans' expectations for this team is just, like, out of control. Like, we just kind of expect perfection at every corner, and it's just – it's kind of exhausting. But I get it. I mean, this is what happens when you have your – I mean, by far and away, the best team of the last 5 years – you just want to keep seeing them at their best, at their best, at their best. Why are they not at their best? Why are they calling this play? Why did this not work? Where's the pass rush? Even though they're fourth in sacks in the league, where's this? Why isn't this? Why aren't they going four and fourth downs? Why are they calling this play? Why is the fullback dive not working when it always worked? It's just like, man, can we just relax for a bit? Can we just relax and enjoy just for a bit?
I mean, I'm personally having a great time. I will say that Trap King Michael Burton might need to just take a breather.
I mean, did you see the slander on it? Like, can they stop calling this play? Like, guys, we talked about how this play never got stopped. Like, it was like 12 for 12, and it has gotten stopped twice now. Is that right?
I think it's either two or three times that it's gotten stuffed.
I only remember twice. I think it's gotten closer and closer to getting stuffed. I don't even remember when the first one was, but I do remember that it happened. And then this one looked uglier than the others. I think Trey Smith just kind of got pushed back. I guess that's it. But it looked a little sloppier than it usually is. It's usually quicker. And this one almost had kind of a delay to it. So I don't know. I mean, I guess scrap it. They'd had the play off of it last week against the Bengals. They've been saving kind of all season.
Yep.
They faked the fullback dive and pitch it out. And it got the first down. It didn't pop for a big play or anything. But it will be interesting to see where they go from here in short yardage, because that was their go-to short yardage play. They had another third and one where they kind of rolled Mahomes out left. He had Travis Kelce, and this is in the middle of, like, the freak out. Has Travis Kelce, doesn't throw it for some reason, and we ended up throwing incomplete and punting. But the Chiefs, this is a big thing to watch, because, as I said last week, they still cannot run it when other teams know that they're going to run it. So on third and ones, they have to find something that works reliably. And part of their go-to with that is, like, a guy like Mecole Hardman or Kadarius Toney to do, like, these jet sweeps to that they don't seem to want to use this guy more. But figuring out something that's going to work in short yardage will be a big thing to watch going forward.
So does seeing Pacheco run for 10 yards on first and 10, I don't even know what the play was, but I think it was first and 10, and they brought him out there, and he had that one really hard punishing run that ended the game. That was the last football play of the game, I'll say. Does that change your mind at all? I mean, that is 100%. We know that you're going to run. It's the end of a game. You know, it's not a short yardage situation, but seeing that kind of stuff from them, does that maybe make you think, like, Pacheco's kind of finding his feet, the offensive line kind of finding theirs a little bit too? I think I even saw, whether people like this or not, it's not against the run, it's actually in pass blocking, that Orlando Brown is the number one rated tackle over the last three games or something against the pass. You can find a number for anything these days, folks.
To answer your question, it's good to see. It's a positive sign for sure. Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of the other, you know, part that goes together here, the 4-minute offense. And the third and one plays, like, those are plays where a series of plays where you know they're going to run it, or a single play where you know they're going to run it, and both very important. I mean, this will win games for you. A very similar situation to this, and Denver has a great defense. I mean, who knows what their team psyche is at this point, but a great defense like that in a situation where, okay, you have to get two first downs now. If not, now you have to rely on this defense to get a stop to maybe win a playoff game. Is that what you want? So it's these are both very important, and that was a very good sign, but I would say I still don't trust it now.
So the other member of the tandem, one Dirk McChicken, shout out to you, Dirk McChicken. I don't know if you happened to catch Andy Reid on, I believe it would have been Monday. They asked him about Jerick McKinnon. And he said, yeah, man, that guy's a dinosaur.
A dinosaur?
Called him a dinosaur. And then he said, he's like, you know, when you've been in the league for 9 years, and he's like, and those years are like dog years. All right. I mean, Andy, digging into, you know, the animal farm a little bit here, to talk about Jerick McKinnon. I just, to me, Pacheco, there's a lot to work with. And I feel like we've watched him get better this season. Like, he used to be so lost trying to find the hole. He was just not a running back. And I think he's gotten a lot better at seeing where he's supposed to go, being a little bit more patient, finding when to be explosive instead of just running like Bobby Boucher. I think, however, that it is still abundantly clear, and not just in a, well, he's been there before, or he's got a little bit more well-rounded or developed game. Jerick McKinnon is a better football player than Isaiah Pacheco. I don't know that Pacheco is going to bring to the table all the things that Jerick McKinnon does at any point in his career. They are different players, but I believe that Jerick McKinnon is easily the best running back that the Chiefs have. And he is truly, to me, the guy that shows flashes, you know, over the last 2 years. Let's not forget that the playoff run that he had, I don't have the numbers on it, but I think he averaged 100 and something yards over the playoffs last year, had a couple really nice games running and receiving. He's just the most dangerous weapon in that backfield. But I like how they're using both of them. And it made me think, you know, Clyde is probably not on this football team next year. And so I wanted to maybe just think a little bit about how running back seems to work. You know, the Chiefs draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and you know, whether you were happy about the pick or mad about the pick, we can look back and say they made a bad decision. Drafting him with that pick was the incorrect choice. Now that we have, you know, 3 years worth of his career to say that.
And really, I mean, after a Super Bowl, who didn't make a bad decision? I mean, right. Were you really living if you didn't make a bad decision after the Chiefs Super Bowl? I mean, they get one too. They get one too.
Precisely. I think that, like, rather than lamenting the pick, can we just see the forest for the trees and be thankful that they figured out what to do and how running back works, or maybe even how the NFL works? You draft a guy in the first round and he flops, and you draft a guy in the seventh round and he looks really promising, and oh yeah, that 9-year veteran is probably really good, maybe just for you, maybe not for another team, but like, they have figured it out. I don't think that the running backs are bad. Clyde, he might be bad, maybe.
Well, I think Clyde would only be going into year four, right?
Next year, yeah.
So, I mean, he pretty much has a guaranteed contract. I think he will be on the team is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if he'll be. Starting, but I do think he would still be on the team just because you have, you know, control of him for that year, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't, like, I don't think they would use him on special teams. And so it's like he's just a runner. You know, he's just we'll see, whatever. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, he does not matter. That's, we agree there. but yeah, I do think they trust Jerick McChicken more. So I mean, he can kind of do everything. They trust him in the passing game. I mean, just looking at his stats right now, he has 222 rushing yards and 359 receiving yards. So obviously his role is clearly defined there. He's more of a receiving back than he is running back, which is awesome.
Probably like the third down back, technically, right?
How many years have I been begging for the Chiefs to get this, you know, James White receiving back that the Patriots always use, and we might have him. So props to that. But Pacheco's probably better at, like, pure running. You just put, you know, as the number one job of a running back. But I do agree, there's not much reason to compare the two against each other, but the combination of them is solid, and that's what you need, and that's what they've figured out. Like, the running back rotation is just, that's what it is moving forward. Like, last year, like, there's a whole bunch of questions, and it was like the Jerick McChicken show down the stretch, because Clyde got hurt right before the playoffs, right? Because it was pretty much just him dominating the backfield, Jerick McChicken, that is, in the playoffs, because he was like the only one they had that they could trust left. So it is good to have a 1-2 punch like that, and I'm excited about where they're at, because Pacheco, He fucking runs mean. He seems to be figuring things out. He's running at a 4.8 yards per attempt clip right now. The running game has been better lately. So yeah, I'm fully satisfied with where they're at running back with those two. I'm very happy.
Do you think that Ronald Jones is going to be a factor? Like, he didn't play a snap on Sunday, and I'm just like,
he was.
You don't want to like guess that someone is going to get hurt, but like if Pacheco goes down, like Ronald Jones becomes that guy, that power runner, you know. And if they want to have a mix, like, I mean, when we were thinking about short yardage, I'm like, I would love to see 225 pound Ronald Jones with a head full of steam crashing into a short yardage situation. And I don't know. I mean, look, if we can use tight ends in this come over and take a quarterback sneak short yardage stuff, there's no reason we can't have a short yardage specialist running back. You know, if we're trying to figure out
how to
run it when they know it's coming, you know, maybe that could be Ronald Jones. I don't know. It certainly doesn't seem to be Michael Burton. No offense, but.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's clear those two and then their backups are, you know, Jones as the runner, and then either Melvin Gordon or Clyde. I don't even know what Clyde's status is.
I forgot that Melvin. Yeah, he's on the practice squad. I mean, interesting. Melvin.
But he would be the backup in case McChicken gets hurt. I believe they just kind of have each of them slotted as their specific roles. But as long as they don't get hurt, I think they got those two moving forward. Yeah.
So before we talk defense, we don't need to talk about all the things that Travis Kelce does. He's amazing. You guys have heard those stats and seen those stats, you know, since before that game. I do want to say, and maybe this is the low hanging fruit, this team is so much better when Juju was on the field. When he's a full go, it seems like it's really obvious that that is what changes the complexion of their offense. But I really do think if when the playoffs begin, they are even more healthy than they are currently, teams are going to have a pretty tough time figuring out how to defend this team. And I mean, they're the number one scoring offense in the league, even with some of the clunkiness that we've seen at times. But it seems like they've, you know, we know Juju has missed a little bit of time. McColl has missed some time. Tony was a midseason addition who has also missed some time. The running backs, they've been shuffling through all these different things. Tooney missed some games in there. And it's just like, you know, the offense, if they can really get to full strength and be clicking in the playoffs, they're going to be looking like one of the more fortunate teams in the league if that's truly where they're at. A number one rated offense that actually has the full complement of players, and particularly if they can get that one seed and be rested, nobody wants to play them. I think, though, when I look at this team, and I think so much about how this offense, like what the potential of the offense is, and I do think that the Chiefs are like the best team in the NFL. I absolutely do. But I think that where we maybe need to like just admit, and if this kind of speaks to you saying that maybe Chiefs fans were thinking that this game against Denver was the get right game. Well, maybe it's going to be Houston this weekend. Houston's terrible. And I think Damian Pierce is not supposed to play. Good luck, Texans.
And they're feisty this week. Feisty.
That's fair. I think that we have to admit a little bit that the Chiefs, I don't think they have in them right now. And I think some of this has to do with being a young defense, probably. But it seems like they don't have the ability right now to go out there and do that. Like, well, they kind of played a C-plus game and they can still beat the Bills or the Bengals. They're not so far ahead of these other AFC opponents. I mean, and you've talked about how poorly they've performed against them five of the last six. But I think it's just that I start to get excited about being able to kind of waltz your way into the playoffs a little bit, and try to get everybody healthy and really get the team all on the same page. And I think they're going to be playing their best football when the playoffs roll around.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of interesting how the schedule is kind of stacked up, just with the being very top heavy, getting most of these tough games early, and then just kind of a cakewalk down the stretch. I mean, Broncos, Texans, Seahawks, who are kind of falling apart, Broncos, and then Raiders. It's an interesting path. Just it's almost just like a 5-6 week lull in here before, you know, we really get going. And is that better or not? I mean, it kind of gives them like a mental break, maybe a little bit, instead of just like having to come out and battle every single week, but maybe that kind of backfires sometimes. So I don't think there's any one surefire way, but that is kind of an interesting way how the schedule is just broken down for them.
Well,
and playing all these tough teams, mostly right in the middle, I guess, towards the end. Because, I mean, even teams that we thought would be good, like Arizona coming off playoff, Tampa Bay coming off playoff, even they're not as good as they seem to be. But then that middle section where you just go Bills, 49ers, Titans, Jags, who are underrated, Chargers, and then Bengals a little bit later. That's just that's a really rough stretch in there where they, you know, had their struggles, I guess.
Right, right. And, I mean, that's natural. Over the course of the season, but let's talk about the defense. Let's talk about the defense. You did a lot of preparation on this show, a defensive deep dive, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know if I call it a deep dive because there's nothing really outside of the ordinary here. I was just kind of collecting the season stats to see where they are and to see what we think of this defense. Like, are they good enough? Because on Sunday, we were kind of in the group chat kind of going back and forth, and I think you're just higher on the defense than I am right now, which, you know, we've kind of talked out a few times on this here program. So, I mean, just the defense in general, I mean, we've kind of compared it to past years of Chiefs defense. I don't know. Do you think this defense, do you trust this defense? Because we're really gearing up. I mean, these last games, you and I are not going to do a lot of matchup specific stuff here. We're looking at this team going into the playoffs and getting right for the playoffs. And this defense is basically what it's going to be right now. We've seen 13 games. We've seen most of the season now. We got the meat of it. I mean, so I just have a bunch of stats. Do you have any leading thoughts on where this defense is at as we approach the playoffs?
I mean, look, they're young. They're young. That is where they are at. It feels right now to me more like a bunch of spare parts than it does like a really unit defense. They're not a complete defense, maybe in that way. I think that speaking to being able to like find a number for anything, I mean, you look at some of what they've done, and ultimately I think the biggest area where the Chiefs I think struggle, where they're not doing what we hope that they would do defensively, is that they're not turning people over at a high enough rate. They're in the bottom 10 in the league in takeaways.
We'll step on my stats.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to, but like, I think that that's when I think about this defense, like, where do they need to get better? They need a playmaker in the back end, and particularly around the ball.
You're impressed by McDuffie taking a ball right off of the face mask.
It seemed like there were a couple guys that kind of lost the ball in this game.
Well, no, I think he thought that the other defender was going to hit the ball, so he was kind of lost track of it, but it was not a great look. Just smashing him right in the face, like, all right, we finally got a chance for an easy interception, and smack right in the face.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, when you've got a bunch of rookies that aren't probably like playing loose and confident, like, you know, it seems like these guys are probably hanging on for dear life at times. I don't necessarily expect them to go out and make a bunch of game-changing plays as rookies. I mean, look, McDuffie, sure, because he missed time, he's certainly playing well in coverage, but I think that they've said that he has the best ball skills of anybody, despite that one going off of his visor. But when I think about like a Joshua Williams or a Jalen Watson, you know, a fourth round pick and a seventh round pick, the fact that they even like traded Fenton away because they're like, this is just what we're rolling with. We trust these guys enough, I guess. I think it's still not necessarily that you expect them to come out and, you know, have eight interceptions or something like Marcus Peters. You know, that guy was taken in the top 20 picks or whatever. So, you know, I think if anybody has maybe not been able to start getting it rolling, hitting the expectations of those corners, it's probably McDuffie. But ultimately, I think the player that's just kind of shown that they probably don't have much of a future with this team, where they potentially need the biggest upgrade, is at Juan Thornhill's position. I think that that's probably a problem area for them. But bring the stats. I'm more talking about players.
Well, yeah, and while we're here, I would just say I think offenses have started attacking the Chiefs in specific ways, which is what you'll start to see come playoff time.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, passing over the middle of the field, because I don't think their linebackers are great in coverage. So I think you're starting to see that. And then on the outside, and I don't hear many people talking about this, but I think teams are clearly targeting Joshua Williams. And, you know, you brought him up. He's a fourth round rookie. So this, you know, it's a very tough spot for him. But unfortunately, he is in this spot where, okay, you're going to be the guy that teams are going after in a very important playoff run. So no, it's not fair to ask him to do this necessarily. And he still has a bright future, but you really saw the Bengals and now the Broncos too, going after Joshua Williams. And the most interesting thing from this game is that they started splitting series between Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson. And so I think the Chiefs might be waffling on their decision there because they got Snead and McDuffie locked in as corner one and corner two. But that corner three is kind of the question mark right now. And I think they're waffling a little bit on which guy they want to go with, because I think Jalen Watson, to me, at the beginning of the season, he looked better than Joshua Williams has since he's kind of taken over here in the middle of the season. So I would personally lean Jalen Watson, and their snaps kind of got close to even in this game. They're that's really back and forth where, you know, the game before, I think Watson got one series in there. So they're really evening it up, taking a look at both. And that will be one of the bigger questions facing this team and this defense going into the playoffs, is choosing the right guy. Because I don't think you want to be rotating them come playoff time. You want to pick one of the guys. And I personally would pick Jalen Watson.
I honestly, when they started playing Williams, I didn't understand why.
Yeah, Watson, Sean, he looked so good.
I didn't feel like I had any problem with Jalen Watson at all. I didn't think that he had like this, oh my gosh, he just got exposed or something. Like it never felt like that. I thought he was actually like a really physical player. And you know, having the interception at the end of the Chargers game, like even forgetting about that play, I still felt like Jalen Watson was playing very well on a down to down basis. And so when they put Joshua Williams out there, I was like, I mean, I guess he's just playing really well in practice or what. I don't know. It didn't seem like there was a reason to pull Watson off the field.
Other than so, he was a higher draft pick, like he's a fourth rounder compared to a seventh rounder.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what they end up doing there. I did notice that it was, I think they said it was Williams' lowest snap count since he became the starter and Watson's highest. And you know, yeah, you don't want to get it wrong, for sure. That's something that they definitely need to be looking at. But right. tell me some statistics.
All right, let's get in some numbers here. So DVOA, that kind of takes everything into account. So this is like an overall ranking. They are 25th right now in defensive DVOA. Weighted DVOA, which is just, it leans more towards the later season, so more how they're playing now. 24th, about the same. Against the pass, 25th. Against the run, 20th. So pretty straight across the board, right there in the 20s, is what DVOA, which should be an overall metric, sees this defense.
Does DVOA work the way that, I know people have talked about how some of the PFF things work, where it might work against Mahomes in certain games where it's like in crunch time, situational, like in the fourth quarter, it's worth more points or something.
I'm not sure if it's related to game time. I know it's opponent adjusted, because that's part of the DVOA is opponent adjusted. But I don't know about certain times in the game. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, some of those metrics, it's hard to know exactly what it is that they're saying. But yeah, I mean, if it's just kind of here's an overall look at based on the different things that we're evaluating, the Chiefs are in the, you know, bottom 10, bottom seven ish.
Yeah. So then, and then in points per drive, they're 18th in points. And then a stat I really like, points per drive, they're 23rd. So it goes down a little bit. So they haven't seen too many drives. I mean, the question, I guess, is this good enough? Because, you know, looking at the defense, this would be more like the Chiefs teams that kind of came up short and did not win the Super Bowl, as opposed to the 2019 defense, which ranked a little bit better in all these qualities. So I think it compares more to those teams when we're looking at an overall grade, as opposed to, you know, the 2019 team, which came out on top.
Well, so let me ask you this. Like, do you feel like in these losses, let's say against the Bengals or against the Bills or against the Colts, that like any of those games that the Chiefs lost, it was like, well, if the defense would have just gotten this stop or whatever, did you walk away from those games thinking this defense wasn't good enough today?
No, I mean, I feel like Bills game, we came away blaming the offense. Bengals game, I mean, it was kind of split, I guess. The Colts game, they gave up that drive at the end. I just don't know if I trust them at the end to make a play.
The way that, like, so, and let me ask, like, it's much easier to trust the 2019 defense led by newcomers, Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark, who have clearly changed everything. They're veterans, and we've got high expectations for both of them. Both of them, huge contracts. Frank's traded for to be brought here. Like, you have more naturally confidence. And it's almost like looking at
some alpha dogs.
And you look at this young team and you're like, I don't know who's good. And I don't know who's going to be good. I don't know who's going to want, like, be worthy of that Frank Clark contract or that Tyrann Mathieu contract. Like, who's the leader of this defense? Do we know? Would you say, like, we could say that it's Nick Bolton, maybe?
No, I think we've kind of decided. I think it's Chris Jones.
Well, is he the leader? I mean, he's the best player. Is he?
I think so. I mean, and you know, put rah-rah stuff aside, I think they're very dependent on the Chris Jones big play. One thing I was kind of thinking of, you know, Chris Jones has made a lot of big plays, especially at the end of this game, and that's a lot of reason we've been talking him up all year as, you know, defensive player of the year candidate. And it's one thing that we did not see in the Bengals game. Like, we were kind of ready for it. Okay, here it comes. Here's the time for a Chris Jones big play. And that will be the one big play that we need from the defense. And then the offense will put this game away, kind of thing. And yet, looking at the season, you know, I kind of went back and looked, how'd Chris Jones do in all these close games? Chargers, first game, he had a third down sack and he had a third and two run stuff. Colts game, he comes up with the play, but it does not count because of the roughing the passer. Makes that at the very end. The Raiders, he makes a huge play, not at the end of the game necessarily, but when the team really needs it, then it doesn't count because of a bogus call, but it actually counts big time because it completely swung the whole momentum of that game. So I think that one kind of counts. Bills game, he has the Josh Allen trip sack, which did count, and actually gave the ball back to the offense with the lead in the fourth quarter against the Bills. So a big play made there. Hard to blame him for that. Titans, he actually ends the game in overtime with a sack. Chargers, number two game in LA. He has two sacks in the fourth quarter. Bengals game, nothing. Didn't hear from him. And that's like the disappointing defensive game. And then Sunday against the Broncos, hits Rippon as he's throwing it, forces the interception, which is the final defensive play of the game. The offense runs the rest of the clock out. So just like the big Chris Jones play, we've seen it time and time again. But I do think the Chiefs defense is very dependent on it, which is kind of scary. Because, I mean, if you don't get it, like in the Bengals game, if they just do a good job of shutting him down, I don't know if they have, you know, anything else. Like, I don't – who else is going to make that big play, which is, you know, what we've kind of been talking about the last few weeks. I don't know if they got it. So they kind of got their guy, but if he doesn't do it, I don't know who else they got.
The way that you're talking about it, it unlocked something in my brain. And I think what we are seeing from Chris Jones, the way that he's played this year, Bengals game aside, you know, people jumped off the defensive player of the year bandwagon faster than I've ever seen after one quiet game against the Bengals. Big, important game, but quiet. Well, it's kind of counterintuitive, and I think most people don't think about a Chris Jones, certainly not a Chris Jones, in the like truly elite category of NFL players, particularly on the defensive line, because the defensive tackle is not a glamour spot. You don't get the giant money the way that the edge rushers do. You don't generate the sacks and the pressures the way that the edge rushers do. You don't rack up all those stats when you play on the interior. Aaron Donald, because he's arguably the best defensive tackle that the NFL has ever seen, he gets to be able to be the best pass rusher on his defensive line, and everyone says the Rams defense is great. Think about the guys that have played with Aaron Donald on that defensive line. We're talking about the Dante Fowlers of the world, rotating through a bunch of players that were bad on other teams, you know, or not as successful as they should have been. I mean, I believe they brought in Clay Matthews at one point in that ended up not working out. The Rams have had to kind of go through a bunch of like average pass rushers, except for their run to the Super Bowl with Von Miller. When they got a legitimate second option, that defense was at its best. And then Von Miller, another Hall of Famer, going to be tough to kind of recreate that. But when you look at the Chiefs, if you want to step back to 2019 and say Chris Jones is your best pass rusher, he got, you know, the best out of Frank Clark that year. And Frank Clark was no Von Miller, but the way that he closed out games and became a second option, I think that the Chiefs are maybe in a position where for two or three seasons, if Chris Jones with Joe Cullen and some of the other guys that are around him, Karloftis, you can't really expect a lot out of Carlos Dunlap going forward, given his age, but I think that the Chiefs can make it happen defensively with Chris Jones as their best pass rusher, but it's while they're trying to figure out how to transition away from it. But that is interesting given, I mean, what you're saying is he is clearly like, he's the closer, he's the finisher. And he is certainly their best player. I did not think that all of those plays were coming at the end of the game.
Much everything I listed was fourth quarter outside of the Raiders game, which I think was right before halftime, I want to say.
Yeah.
Everything else, it's just been like, multiple times I've been like, where's Chris Jones been at this game? And then in the fourth quarter, here he comes. Just, you know, a huge third down and he comes through. He's been a very clutch defensive tackle, very clutch gene.
Can I say something real quick about the DVOA thing? Actually, you were talking about points per game. Mm-hmm. Points per drive, they're a little bit lower, but points per game, you said they were 18th?
18th.
That number is going to get better over the next few games. I know the DVOA is opponent adjusted, but we talk about how weak the schedule is on the back end here. If the Chiefs defense has at least good games against, you know, let's say Houston and, you know, Denver the next time because they've seen it or something. Maybe Russ still isn't back. Who knows? If they have a couple good games in there and then play the 18th best as they have the rest of the year, they're going to jump up into the top half of the league, at least in points per game. And that is a potentially a little reductive stat, but ultimately with this team, it's, you know, are you giving up fewer than you're scoring? Like, the expectations for the defense are pretty low. And I would almost even think, I think they're exceeding expectations this year for me, but maybe mine are different than other people. Bring us some more data.
All right. Yeah, I was kind of looking at past Chiefs team. In 2019, they really, down the stretch, they allow, you know, 9 points, 16, 3, 3, 21. And that's the last five games of the regular season. Like, they really, they're coming in hot in 2019.
Yeah.
And then last season, they had kind of that stretch in the middle of the season where, you know, where they were like one of the worst defenses ever. And then all of a sudden they go, you know, 7 to the Packers with their backup quarterback, 14, 9, 9, 9, 28 and 10. It's just like in the middle of the season, they have that stretch of really locking them down. I really haven't seen that this year. I mean, it's really just been right in the low 20s, you know, upper teens, pretty much the whole stretch of the season. Mm-hmm. Rams only scored 10 with nothing at quarterback, essentially. But really haven't seen like that really good stretch, like that the couple dominant games in there from the defense. It's really just been pretty steady throughout the season, which is different than what it's been these last handful of seasons.
And that's why this game against Denver is so weird, because they had their highest sack total of the season. They tied for their most turnovers forced in a game. I mean, the defense, like, aside from the 28 points, it's one of their best games. And it's so, that's what I'm saying. It's weird. And I am just happy to embrace it. It's fine.
Okay. And one thing that we've talked about, like, was kind of just like, if they can just get a pass rush, this defense will be good enough. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a theme going into the season, I think. If we can just get back to that, because they were very low in sacks last year. Probably the biggest problem with the team was just the lack of pass rush. And I really think people would continue to say that this year, despite what the stats say, because the pass rush, so sack percentage, this isn't total sack, this is, you know, based on number of dropbacks. Sack percentage, they're sixth. Hurry percentage, they're eighth. QB knockdown percentage, just another way of looking at it, 16th, I guess. I was just kind of really looking close to this because I am one of those people who kind of thinks that this pass rush isn't good enough, despite what these stats tell me. Like, I don't know, I'm kind of watching this team every week, and this week was kind of the perfect encapsulation, because we had all these defensive linemen step up. Like, you saw Saunders went on a snap, Dunlap, Dana had a good snap, George got in on the action, even Derek Nnadi drew a holding penalty, and yet I still do not trust them as a whole, as a defensive line whole, to get pressure when it counts. Am I crazy?
No, but can I ask you, like, could we say that Chris Jones is like the Travis Kelce of the defense, and the rest of the defenders, as far as the sack numbers are concerned, is like Mahomes telling you, you never know where it's going to come from. You never know.
Yeah, like, but who's Mahomes?
Well,
who's Mahomes?
That's fair. That's fair.
I don't know. I don't know if you're putting Mahomes there. Spags? Is Spags Mahomes? Because
well,
I mean, it's a good analogy, but I mean, that's what the Chiefs offense would look like with an average quarterback, with Alex Smith. Like, okay, well, they got their one great piece and a bunch of average pieces. Let's see what Alex can do with them. But no, it's Mahomes, so he can bring them all up. If we had the Mahomes, yeah, sure. If we had Ray Lewis out there, maybe directing everybody.
Who's our Mahomes on defense?
I mean, if we're putting
how bad is this? If we're gonna offend Pat Mahomes here, like, is it Chris Jones? Is
Pat Mahomes? Yeah. He's Mahomes and Kelce.
I mean, he's big. He's a big guy.
So yeah, it's just kind of a weird dichotomy where, you see people complain about every single week, where's the pass rush? And that's what I'm saying every week. Where's the pass rush? And yet the numbers say the pass rush is there. I don't know. I just don't trust it. So that'll be what I'm keeping my eye on, is how this defensive line can look over these, you know, last 4 weeks. Can they start getting pressure with only four? And see if they can improve that.
This is silly. Can I ask you a question though?
Oh yeah.
So, not Chris Jones category, who's your favorite defensive lineman? And if it has to be just like the dude that you like the most, that's fine. Or if it's like, who's the next guy? Who's the next best defensive lineman after Chris Jones? Who is it?
Who was the dude who got hurt? The Warthog? The Warthog.
Warden?
No, I mean, Colin Saunders, I think he's really fun. I like Dunlap. I think he brings a lot. I'm not crazy about George. I think we keep trying to build him up, but he's, every time he makes a sack, it's just like, it's not a quick win. It's just like, he's like the dirty work does, like, kind of cleans it up. He's like the custodian, George, the custodian. But I don't know. I kind of like Dunlap. I think Dunlap can do some things.
I think Dunlap is definitely like got something in the tank for sure. He's been fun to watch. A guy that you didn't mention, who I think like truly matters to this team, certainly at least in AFC West games, Mike Dana, man. Like I feel like he makes plays against the run and the pass. Like it's like he was just this long shot to make the team and just a guy that they kept saying like Brendan Daly really liked him. I mean, he played 1 year at Michigan as a rotational player. He just was like an unheralded college prospect, and he comes in here and he just does what they ask, and he's a big time mismatch on the inside. He's a strange guy, strange football player, and I dig him.
Weird guy, Ace.
Yeah, right. On George, I love that you're calling him a janitor because he's kind of cleaning things up. Because it does kind of seem like maybe George is trying to push the mop bucket around out there, and that's what's keeping him busy.
Which, I mean, what you need. It's important. You just don't want your first round pick to be that.
I also think that it's fair and maybe important to remember that, like, rookie sack numbers are bad always.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like if a rookie hits double digits in sacks, like, that guy is probably going to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, and there was that stat with like the pass rush win percentage, I believe was the stat. And it was Aiden Hutchinson, Trayvon Walker, and George were all right in a row. I mean, it was like 35th, 36th, and 37th in the NFL. But it's like, hey, here's the number one and number two overall picks and George right together. So, you know, either those guys are busts and they're all busts, or, you know, rookies – defensive ends just don't produce really. And it's a hard job. It's like, it's not something that you just take off in year one. So hopefully there's some promising signs there.
Well, and honestly, I don't even know, like I'm not gonna try to go find it. I'm sure someone has done it, but like where George is even lining up, I don't know how much defensive end he's playing. I mean, they've got all these guys that are moving all around, and I have seen George play as much defensive tackle as I have defensive end, I feel like. Well,
I think they like to get in that third down package where they put all four DNs in the game. Because they're all kind of hovering above like 50% of the snaps, so it doesn't make sense that they're all at DN. So they are sliding down definitely at some point.
And so, I mean, I think that with, you know, a full off season in this program after having been here for a year, like I am in no way saying that, like, I just don't see it. But he's not. He doesn't like give you the big flash. There's no flash in his game at all right now. And I think that where it's been disappointing is, like, if we knew anything about Karlaftis, it was he has this motor, but they talked about his strength. And he hasn't like overpowered anybody, I don't feel like, you know. And if he's playing on the interior, he's probably got some bull rush opportunities. And I don't know. I just haven't really seen anything other than he didn't give up on the play. And that can be useful, but if he never wins fast, then he better be, you know, like Frank Clark level good against the run for his whole career.
And you better have really good coverage behind him.
Yeah.
Because he needs 4 seconds to get a sack. So you need to cover for 4 seconds, which I don't really think the Chiefs are doing right now.
Yeah. Not right now.
But some situational defensive situations. Mm-hmm. Let's work on that. Mm-hmm. But I think this is where a lot of fans have complaints, and the stats kind of bear it out. So let's go here. Third down percentage, they're 20th. Takeaways, which you mentioned earlier, 23rd. So I mean, not as bad as we'd think. Here's a bad one. Red zone touchdown percentage, 32nd. Last in the NFL in red zone touchdown percentage.
Is that second out of 3 years or second out of four?
Second
because
out
of I know they were last and we spent all offseason thinking about it. Never, I remember it.
Yep, that was 2020. And I think they were like 8% worse than they were this year. And they're still last in the NFL this year. So, I mean, they were astronomically bad in 2020.
Okay.
But just a weird one to watch. I mean, they just, I don't know what you think about. I mean, what is red zone defense? Run defense? Like, they're giving a ton of passing touchdowns. They're last in the NFL in passing touchdowns allowed. So I don't know if you can just blame run defense. It's just they don't get stops in the red zone. Their pass defense, they give up a lot of passing touchdowns. Mm. So that's definitely troubling. And then a couple more situational here. Yak allowed, 28th in the NFL, and missed tackles, which I think has really got on the radar lately. They're 26th in the NFL, as in a lot of missed tackles, not in a good way. So some situations there where I think you're seeing a lot of the problems and maybe a lot of the disappointment from Chiefs fans and a lot of the worry going forward is coming from these specific stats.
You know, I think that I just actively make the choice to say that, oh, they're young, they're going to figure it out.
Which is fine for the future, but
yeah.
I mean, do you think they're going to figure out in 4 weeks from now?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we got to remember that in a 17-game season, the Chiefs still have 4 weeks left. I mean, it's basically 20% of your schedule or so. You know, so it's not over. There's a month, right? They still have a month. And, you know, I listened to Nate Taylor talking to BJ, and he said that he feels like the kind of the end of the season here for the offense is about polishing. Like they know the roles and how they want to use the guys, and so they're just going to polish some things against bad teams. What would you say this last month of the season is for the defense? Like what do they need to figure out other than we mentioned the Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams thing? Like what are the goals for the defense over this last month in order to feel like they're ready for the playoffs? Where can they, is it, well, you have to tackle better. You know, is that something you can fix in a month? That kind of stuff. Like I'm curious what they can do over this next month to either make a believer out of you or just, you know, put yourself in Spags' shoes.
I think they need to at least flash some dominance. They need to look like a really good unit, you know, for a half, you know, shut out the Texans in the first half or something like that. And, you know, maybe people look at that and be like, yeah, it's the Texans, who cares? But like, get your confidence up, like get some swagger going, get some toughness to you. Like the missed tackles against the Bengals, I mean, that's just the one game you should be fired up for all season, and just coming out, I mean, missed tackles, a lot of that's just, I mean, I look at it as just attitude. Like, how the fuck are you not bringing the attitude in that game? Like, that's the game to bring it. And to have that kind of performance in that game, like, that's not what I want to see. I want to see the opposite of that. So I want to see, you know, some, like, confidence. I feel like there's no confidence from the defense. They're just kind of out there letting it happen. And, you know, maybe they get a stop, and even Willie Gay made a play. That was great, but still, like I don't know, give me some championship swagger out there.
So a couple things to think about. One, we didn't mention last week, there was speculation about it going into the game and it was all unconfirmed, and then after the game people talked about it, like from members of the team and whatever. But both Travis and Chris, and I think quite a few other players, were like dog sick going into that game. Had been sick for a few days. Kelce and Chris Jones both like toughing it out, and neither one of them had a good day. And those are very important players. I also think, and I mean, talk is cheap, but Frank is saying stuff the last 2 weeks. After the Bengals game, he said, like, you won't see us play like that again. And then after this Broncos game, he steps out and says, "This is, we played terrible. That was a terrible game."
Calling everyone busters.
Yeah, right.
Social media busters.
I don't know what that means, but like they're not they're not denying it. And you know, if Frank can catch a little magic in a bottle, he can be a difference maker. I don't know that he's been a difference maker other than like one or two games this year. So that's a little disappointing.
Especially because he's leading the defensive end in snaps. Like the other guys are all kind of hovering around 50 or 60%, and Frank Clark's been like 80, 90%. Mm. And I guess they just trust him more, and he's probably better against the run and you know, plays his position there better. But we're not seeing him get out the quarterback enough. I mean,
yeah.
As we could say for the last 3 years, we just play that on repeat. But yeah, definitely. I mean, not getting enough from Frank, but I mean, that is, we need a lot of Frank Clark on this defense. Like, we need, you know, our corner, man, he's in the right spot. Could have made a play on it. It was pretty good coverage, but he allowed the catch. And it's just kind of that. Like, we're just kind of there, just letting it happen. And we kind of need to take it to the opposing offense.
Do you wonder? So, you saying that, it really reminded me of some of the negatives that people have correctly pointed out, particularly about guys like Nick Bolton, where it's like, it looks like he's playing the pass, but it's a running play and he's not like coming downhill.
When he's aggressive, he's great. Like when he's attacking the line and getting to the backfield, like he looks fantastic. Like people are calling Bolton an all pro linebacker, like Lewis Riddick.
Is that his name? Yeah. Lewis.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. Lewis Riddick. He's kind of a Chiefs mouthpiece, I guess, but still like a national guy saying like he's an all pro linebacker. Like that's still something. But then at other times, he just looks lost, especially the last couple of weeks. Like has not been a good last couple of weeks for Nick Bolton.
And it's strange because I think that what that means, you know, because it's almost like people have kind of used, well, when Nick Bolton makes good plays, it would be like this is a run blitz. You know, he's being told to be aggressive and then he's aggressive and it works. And so I wonder if like we can call that both ways, like he's being told to back off. And so he backs off. Like if all he is essentially the junkyard dog, you go do what I say. And whether that is being aggressive or backing off, he just listens and follows directions. I mean, that can in some ways be a knock because that means that like he doesn't bring something to the table other than following directions. But I think that like what it seems like the Chiefs are missing to me that I really thought we were going to see this year. And this might speak to a lack of speed or athleticism or just bad reads defensively. But man, when we were looking at the roster, looking at the potential depth chart and the style of the guys that we have on this team, I was like, man, the Chiefs are going to hurt people on defense. They've got guys that love to lay the wood. And like, I don't feel like I've seen the big hits from Thornhill, Justin Reed, Nick Bolton, Legarius Sneed. Like, you know, they've got all these guys, and even Leo Chenal and Brian Cook, both of them described as these big hitters coming out of college. And I'm like, we've got a team that's going to be able to run around and at the very least, like, let people know that they played the Chiefs. And it's like guys aren't in position to do it. The one time that I remember is Thornhill popping that guy and getting flagged for it. And I believe that that was also like a 15-yard pass into the end zone. Like he didn't have to cover a bunch of ground. It was just being in this short area. And so it's like if I walked into this thinking, I've watched all of these guys before and seen the attitude that this defense is going to play with at different times for these players, maybe not all at the NFL level, they haven't gotten there yet. I don't see that. Like there's not, what about the Chiefs defense is intimidating, you know, and that one to thing, me, I think is
one thing.
Chris Jones.
Yeah.
And so do you, let me ask you this. I think you probably had this conversation with Maddie and I think you tried to talk about it a little bit, but like, I mean, it sounds like potentially the strategy that maybe the Bengals took and that some other teams are going to take. And we've even seen the Chiefs in that game against the Niners. I know that they were missing a couple players on the defense, but we came out of that game hearing Nick Bosa talk about all the stuff that the Chiefs threw at him, and it was just like, it just threw me off. I like couldn't do anything. And so if that's what the Bengals are doing to Chris Jones and other teams are able to do it, yeah, they might get pretty stifled defensively. And that's scary, because if they can be fourth in the league in sacks or third in the league in sacks, and, you know, top half of the league are in the top 10 in some of these pressure categories. But if you shut down Chris Jones and as the Bengals did, get it to the point where your blitz isn't working either, yeah, it could be a really rough day, unless they figure out how to start taking the ball away just because somebody in the secondary makes a good play.
Well, and yeah, I mean, that's what I was trying to get at and talking to him. Like, someone who's knows what they're talking about more than me, especially when it comes to, you know, interior line play and stuff like that. You know, they're like, well, the Bengals just do a really good job of keeping two blockers on Chris Jones. Okay. This one question. Why doesn't every team do this?
Well, like, it's not like we haven't seen Chris Jones beat double teams, and the Bengals offensive line is not particularly formidable, even with the additions that they made. So that doesn't make sense, at least to me.
Well, no, but I think it's more because, but it's, I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it's true. I mean, they do a very good job against Chris Jones. So what is it? It's not like, yeah, it doesn't pass the eye. Like, this doesn't make sense, but it happens. And I think a lot of it is just because Burrow is very good against the blitz, and they have the weapons needed to attack the blitz. And the Chiefs kind of, they're able to, the way that they free up Chris Jones is either by bringing extra people, so that makes it one-on-one, or giving the look of bringing extra people. And that means that, you know, kind of fool the offensive line into who they're blocking, and that leads to Chris Jones getting one-on-ones. Because if the Chiefs are just lining up, you know, four defensive linemen against five offensive linemen, of course you're just going to go two offensive linemen at Chris Jones every single time. Who else is going to beat me? So you have to, like, it's kind of on Spags to make that happen, to get Chris Jones in these one-on-one situations. And against the Bengals, you know, in these couple of games that we've played him, he's not able to do it. Like, they kind of hold the cards just because, you know, their guys went on the outside and Burrow's good against the blitz. And the concerning thing is that that's what was exactly what was working against Josh Allen, was blitzing him. But then he kind of figured it out and he threw those two touchdowns, and then Spags went away from the blitz, and then we couldn't get pressure with four. And then that's when the Bills just started moving at will. And I mean, these are the two teams we're facing. I mean, right now we got to play both of those teams and beat them somehow. And that's the whole crux of what we're talking about here. Is the defense good enough to get at least a few stops against the Bengals and Bills and, you know, give this offense a fighting chance to win this? I mean, surely Mahomes can go out there and score 38 points and never punt kind of thing. That's, I mean, but you don't want to rely on that. And that's going to be very hard to do for multiple games. As we saw last season, you know, he might run out of magic. And then what? Like, the defense might have to win you one. Can they do it? And that's the whole crux of what we're talking about here is, can this defense get that done?
And I think, you know, we'll see if they have any surprises. You know, when we initially start this season and you look at a guy like Danny Shelton on the practice squad and you think, okay, well, that's like kind of keeping one in the back pocket, right? We've got this surprise that they can bring at some point. You know, and I think for a long time, but at least certainly before Clyde got hurt, it was kind of like we've been thinking about that with Ronald Jones. Like, well, you know, I don't want to see, like, let's leave no stone unturned. You don't want to end up losing the last game of the season not knowing if Ronald Jones could have done something, or maybe Danny Shelton would have made a difference in the run game or whatever. But right now it seems like that one thing that could potentially change some stuff, maybe it's Brandon Williams. Big Brandon Williams. I noticed him. You know, I noticed him against the run and the pass. And he hasn't played all season. He's only been in Kansas City, I think, for like a week. And he's already out there. And he made some plays. And if this is a guy that can just give them a little extra, and he's wearing such a bad number, though. It's like maybe the worst 66? Number of anybody on the team. 66 defensive linemen. I'm looking at it like,
I kind of like it. It makes him look even bigger.
I just, I think that I get a little old man yelling at the clouds about numbers sometimes. Because like,
oh, hold on. But the vibes that he's bringing up is Mike Pinnell.
Pinnell, yeah, he wore 64.
I think he was 64.
Okay, all right.
So you know, two seasons later, you gotta take it up two numbers, even though it's three seasons later. But who's counting? But yeah, Mike Pinnell is the name I heard thrown around for Brandon Williams. That's the hope, I think.
If I saw Mike Pinnell, I would give him a hug. I would.
I don't think you'd make it all the way around.
I don't think
you'd be able to lock your hands around him.
I think I was the biggest Mike Pinnell fan in all of Kansas City Chiefs fandom. I loved him. Loved that guy.
Planting your flag?
Yeah.
You didn't even know his number.
It doesn't matter. He's number one in my heart.
What team does he play on right now?
Oh, I feel like I saw him with the Bears.
The Bears. All right. He had a Falcons stop in there last year. Bonafide
Pinnell fan.
He was with the Falcons last year.
All right. Dirk, we got a nooner on Sunday. Ugh. Got a good old nooner. You said, ugh, it's a 10 a.m. game for you. What's your routine going to be like Sunday?
Try to make it out of bed by 10 a.m.
Okay. All right. Sip a coffee on the couch.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. All right. You got anything else you want to drop on the people today?
One last nugget. I think that's all I got. The Chiefs are really bad at drawing pass interference flags.
They are like, so bad at it.
It's if the defender is facing you, I know it's disgusting. It's gross. And I don't even know if I want to see it because it's almost kind of endearing that they're so bad at it. Like, no, we're going to do this the right way. But all you got to do is turn around and jump into him. And I've seen Kelsey do it multiple times. I know Justin Watson did it once, but they don't have like what you want to do is just if they're running in and looking at you, not at the ball, just stop. And if they run into you, that's 40 yards. Like, it's gross, but that's how the rules are written. And they never seem to do it. And so it's kind of weird, but I'm kind of coming around on it. I think they play the game the right way.
They're kind of at a competitive disadvantage, at least against certain teams that have that in their, in their arsenal. And look, I mean, here's what I'll tell you. It has taken Pat until this is year six of his career, year five playing football. Five or six, whatever.
Yeah.
It's taken him this long to start throwing back shoulder balls. Starting to happen. So by year 10, I think that they'll be able to draw defensive pass interference a little bit better. And by year 15, I wonder.
What's next? You don't even have anything.
Well, I had something and then I lost it. And so when I froze, it was, do I buy time by saying maybe they'll let him quarterback sneak in year 15 or by year 15 while I was trying to buy myself time, but I lost it. I have one last thing. I need some help. I need some help. So, amateurs out there, folks, let me pull back the curtain a little bit on what it's like to record an episode of Amateur Hour. The computer that I currently own that has been the long time Amateur Hour computer, it is so old that I have now reached the end of the coverage for Microsoft 8.1, which is what my computer runs on. And I got a notification about like certain things that I can't do with my computer anymore.
Yeah, notification. Throw this shit away.
It said something like, you can't run this program unless you have Windows 10 or later. And I was like, oh. Well, so what happens occasionally because of what this computer is like is that,
yeah, I mean,
like,
you got Windows 95, don't you?
Well, it says Windows 8.1. 95 is about the speed that this one's running at. You know, it's basically dial up. But you know, it's trusty, it's reliable, and reliably sometimes it will force me to restart and then download and install updates that I don't even know what they are, and it will take like an hour. And it just, it's not. I have a bad computer, and I'm trying to figure out, being an educator, not a particularly wealthy one at all. Like, do I just go buy a new computer, or yeah, can I like get this thing? Like, can I go get a new Windows?
No.
How much do computers cost? I don't know.
They're cheap as hell.
What is that? Like a few hundred doll hairs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, any computer nerds out there wanna give me some advice? I just need I don't even necessarily need the computer to probably have a whole bunch of memory on it.
Necessarily.
But you know, the problem here is that like the program that has all these different things that I use that we've been using for 11 years. I don't know if I can get it onto a new computer. I gotta find the CD-ROM for the Sony sound organizer.
I don't know if they have CD-ROMs anymore, bro.
I'm telling you, like, look, welcome to Amateur Hour, folks.
Somebody update this man.
I mean,
it did take us like 5 years to learn how to do this, like, over the internet.
I'm hanging on.
It took us a long time. I mean, we did. We talked to people on speakerphone
for a long time. Yes, we did.
Oh man, Tucker.
And some of like the fly by night companies that we've used in order to try to find like, is this gonna work for us? That just no. You know,
a producer or what?
Always an adventure on Amateur Hour. Any computer advice that you guys can give me for like the shortest distance between two points of making sure that we can do this show all the time and whatever, that'd be cool.
Do you have like all the episodes downloaded on your computer? Is that why it's so slow? Because you have like...
No, I think I moved a lot of it onto
385 episodes.
It doesn't say that I have a memory problem. It says I've got plenty of space on the computer, but it's just, boy, it goes so, it's a bad experience. It is a one-star rated computer for me for the last 3 years.
I mean, I was timing it. You told me you had to restart your computer. Hopefully it's not another marathon.
At 6:53. It was 6:53. What time did we start recording?
I think like, it was 52 minutes is when you texted me. Or no, you gave me an update at some point. 20 minutes away. I don't know where that came from.
Well, I saw like a new screen. It finished downloading the updates.
Ah, but now, yeah, I think it was 52 minutes in total to restart and get it going again. I took a little nap, took the dog on a walk, went grocery shopping, came back, waited a while longer, then we started the podcast.
That's why we are the voice of the people. Well, Dirk, who's your jefe?
Oh shit. You got one? Go ahead. I keep forgetting.
I mean, I don't want to just like make it obvious. I think my jefe's gotta be Chris Jones. I felt like I just kept seeing him do stuff against that Broncos team, which should be expected because their offensive line was in shambles. I think that if that was game 12 for the Broncos, I want to say they were like, this is like their 17th offensive line combination of the year. I'm like, wait, what? They've been they've been having a rough go of it in Denver. But Chris Jones is able to capitalize. And yeah, you know, he's the alpha. And he, I think he had a pretty nice game out there.
I will forgo the statistical Hefe, which should be Jerk My Chicken. Great game for him. And I'll go with a guy who's been my whipping boy for a while. I may have already apologized to him once before, I believe. But a man who averaged 66 yards per punt. Tommy Townsend enjoying that thin air with a long of 76. He had a 76-yard punt. I don't remember this during the game, but that's a hell of an average. So I'll go ahead and shout out Tommy Thompson as my Tommy Townsend.
And a belated little gay watch update. Nice play, Willie. Nice job.
The gay sex. He had the gay sex. The pick six. The gay six.
You tried way too hard.
The gay six.
That's not. No.
But he had a gay. The gay six.
No.
I enjoyed watching every second of it.
I can't. I just can't. I can't even. Oh my god. Before we go,
did I say it wrong?
It's just not. It's unnecessary. before we go, did Rob text you about the game? Did he talk to you about his in stadium experience?
He did. He sounded drunk.
Well, he sent me today. He said that they just had like an absolutely amazing time. It sounds like he and Mike had a real blast, and that like watching it on TV was a very different experience from being inside the stadium, and it was super fun and exciting, and they got rip roaring drunk. Good for them.
Hey.
And I think it was like a beautiful day. It was like 65 and sunny in Denver.
What? I mean, can you imagine being around Broncos fans for that game? And that's probably the problem with Chiefs fans from that game. They should have been watching with Broncos fans. Mm. Like, imagine, I mean, 13, is it 13 in a row now?
Oh, no, I believe it's 14 in a row against the Broncos and 15 in a row on the road.
Okay.
Against the AFC.
That's, I mean, we're approaching a full season, a 17-0 Patriots, Miami Dolphins, 72 Dolphins, 17-0 stretch against the Denver Broncos. So that's fun.
He's the Raiders game in week 17 away from being undefeated through four seasons of being a quarterback on the road in his division. I mean, 16-0. One of a kind, that Patrick Mahomes. Hope
that Broncos streak. That Broncos streak might be better than any other statistical streak you've had going. I mean, for as much pain as the Broncos have caused us over the years to win that many, whatever. I thought it was 13, but 14, whatever it is, we're gonna keep adding to it because it ain't ending anytime soon. That streak is the one we got to keep going.
I, especially the way that it started, he got fucking pulled out of the game because the game was over and Tyler Bray let them back in it, and Mahomes leads a game-winning drive after sitting for like three series. That could have been the one Broncos loss there, but no, he still went in and took care of business in his very first game as a professional. I hope everybody enjoys the nooner on Sunday. This has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's his Dirkness. Don't tell anybody what Dirk said. Just
gay six. The gay six.
Oh my god.
Who the best?
Go join.